Thank you for attending this ISV Discovery this afternoon, this technical session after a great session from Steve Clayton this morning. I'll be talking to you this session. Purpose of this session is to give you some kind of view what developing for Windows Azure is. I'll go through a number of scenarios to show you how can you move to the cloud, how can you take advantage of the cloud computing platform, which Windows Azure is. As an ISV, what are kind of the things you need to consider when you're going, when you're looking at the cloud as a target platform. There's a number of things that you need to take in mind when considering going into the cloud. Okay. The people who've been here already this morning have seen already this slide. What we see is over the last couple of decades, we have gone through some major, what we call generational shifts in terms of technology. What we see is technology is very often, if not mostly, if not always, a key driver for moving business and economical decisions. What we see is that in the early days when we had mainframes, the economics and business were mainly focused towards efficiency because hardware, software that came with it were very expensive. Organizations had to do high upfront investments in hardware and software. Optimizing to efficiency to make the best use of that expensive hardware. Then we moved into PCs and servers being more of a commodity, being cheaper hardware, being cheaper operating system, cheaper software, which led into a more agile and more lower cost optimizing for lower costs. But focus for the business became more of focusing on software and licensing rather than the big chunk of money that you had, the big pile of money that you had to have just for buying the machine. So servers, PCs became more of a commodity. What we see now is that with the cloud comes basically the ability to have large scale and on-demand processing available, where actually you allocate and deallocate resources as you need them for your processing. And this is also what we'll see in the scenarios that I'll present, is that the cloud is not an all or nothing story. It is something that can grow and that you can expand gradually over time. Then clouds from a business perspective, and this is something I guess where the session from Kurt will go into somewhat more detail. Pricing and pay-as-you-go models are there, which will drive the expense that you need to do for deploying on the cloud. So big shifts driven by technology. So how do we see, how does Microsoft actually see the cloud? Is basically we have a number of fundamentals where we focus of the cloud is we want to have an environment, an infrastructure that allows us to scale out or scale in if you don't need the resources automatically as you need the resources. So this should all be provided by the platform. Same thing goes with automated service management. You don't want to allocate 20, 50, 100 servers in the cloud and having to manage all of those instances in the same way as you would manage them on-premise. So what the cloud should offer you is a means for managing those instances, managing your high availability. Brings me to the next point. Do all that automatically and as part of that cloud computing platform. High availability. Again, there the cloud, you go to the cloud, it offers you this platform offers you the capability of having a highly available environment, which, again, enforced through the platform, through all of the mechanisms that are foreseen for checking, is my instance healthy? Is it still running? Do I need to spin up a new instance because the other one died because of a hardware malfunctioning, for example. And then final topic there, cloud computing. It deals with multi-tenancy. So typically when you move your application into the cloud, or even even before, doing a software as a service solution, you intend to have that solution available for multiple customers. Preferably, as an ISV, you have more than one customer. With the cloud computing platform, you want those customers to be hosted on the set of your servers in a multi-tenant way, allowing your application to have multiple customers at the same time connecting to that application. So there's a number of choices that we provide you there. So as I said, it's not an all or nothing story. First choices you have with regards to location. Where are my servers? Where is my hardware, my infrastructure? Where is that hosted? It can be on-premise, being on-premise at your site. Could be at a hoster. It could be off-premise at a hoster or in the cloud on Windows Azure. Same thing goes for heterogeneous, very homogeneous infrastructure. You could have different types of servers, different kinds of technology sitting there. Business model, this kind of boils down to capital expenditure, buying, doing an upfront investment, whereas a cloud computing model transfers and shifts that into an operational model, where you pay as your operations continue, rather than having to do a big investment in hardware and software licenses, for example. And then in terms of ownership, where the on-premise side, you actually own the hardware, you own all of the devices, all of the storage, all of the things that come with running a data center, whereas in a cloud, you actually lease or rent or just rent the resources you need on a as-you-need basis. And then management, again, as mentioned, if you run your data center yourself, you are the owner, you are the administrator, the manager of that environment. It's your responsibility to do patching, to do hardware maintenance, all of those activities that come with running a data center. Whereas in the cloud, you typically want to either move that to a third party, be it Microsoft if it's hosted on Windows Azure, be it a hoster if you run your application at a hoster. So these are a number of concepts that come into play when looking at the cloud. Now, why would you want to go to the cloud, or what are typical scenarios for moving to the cloud? There's four big buckets that we see for taking a decision on going to the cloud, moving part of your application or moving the entire application to the cloud. The first one is the on-off scenario. Typical scenario there is you have between a well-defined period, that you're going to be needing a lot of processing power, and you don't want to have to invest in all of the hardware resources just because for 1 week you need to do heavy processing, you need to do heavy calculations. So for example, financial institutions need to do a lot of calculations and trend analysis on funds, for example. Typically they need dozens or hundreds of servers to do all of the calculations during, for example, either a night, just for a few hours, or maybe for a couple of days. What they do is they typically go to the cloud, spin up 100 servers, do the calculations, bring all the servers down. You pay only for the servers, the services you need at that time. That's on. You switch them on, you switch them off when you're done. Yeah. They are typically batch processing or high intense calculations. Second scenario is a scenario where actually you don't know your typical scenarios that are a startup. You're a startup company. You don't know how successful you're going to be. It could be just very limited, having just a number of dozens of customers. You could be the next Facebook, having 500 million, 600 million users on your application. When you start up your application, your business, are you going to provision the infrastructure for potentially being the next Facebook and set up a whole data center with millions, probably thousands of servers just in case you become the big shot. So what you do there is you actually deploy your application to the cloud, and as you grow, as you see users being added to your service, you just allocate more servers and you grow as you need. Yeah. So this is typically startup or a business where you don't know, you launch a new product, you don't know how successful it's going to be. Unpredictable bursting, again. What can you relate this one to? A typical scenario is a marketing company that's launching a marketing campaign. And as a result of that marketing campaign, they have, it's very successful. It gets a lot of attention. It gets mentioned on Facebook, on Twitter, on YouTube. There's millions of users that all of a sudden want to use that and want to check that company. And they get some burst in activity, which they did not expect, yeah, which they didn't anticipate. But this, again, is a very typical scenario for cloud, because you can quickly ramp up the number of servers you have. Yeah. And then the final one is the more predictable bursting. So you know that in cycles, you have extra resources needs because you have some cyclic processes that need to go on. Typical scenario here is payroll functionality, where at the end of the month or twice a month, for example, Belcacom, when they need to do their billing, they know that they have a number of billing cycles. With every cycle, they have a huge peak of resources that they need. They need more storage. They need more CPU to do all of their processing. So when they know there's a new cycle that's coming up, they can spin up new resources, new instances on Windows Azure, and overcome those bursts. Any questions on that topic? Pretty clear. I think everything boils down to having flexibility in resources and compute and storage resources available to you when you actually need them. So now, how, and this is very high-level view on what the Windows Azure platform is. What we provide you is, first component is Windows Azure being actually the cloud's operating system, giving you components for storage, components for compute, so storage being being tables, being blobs, not actually relational data, unstructured data. Then we have the compute component of Windows Azure Platform is actually the processing power, the CPUs that you need to do calculations. And this finally the management component. Of course, if you have 50, 100 servers and instances running, you want to have some means to manage those instances to know what is happening. So this is Windows Azure, so the operating system that gives you storage and compute. Then next to that, we have the SQL Azure component, which is more or less the cloud counterpart of Microsoft SQL Server. So you have your relational database in the cloud. It will give you access to a relational database just to store data as you would in a regular SQL Server database. Yeah. Again, with tools to, for example, create tables, do database management, spin up new databases, and do management of those databases. Right. One thing to mention here, in terms of development, when it comes to accessing a SQL Azure database, it's only a connection string that you need to change for connecting either to an on-premise or to a SQL Azure database. Then third part of the Windows Azure platform is what we call the Windows Azure App Fabric. It's more of a connectivity component or an integration component that consists of two parts, which is one of them is a service bus, allows you to do connectivity between on-premise applications and cloud applications. So typical scenarios there is that you build an application And for example, for everything that is payment processing or billing, you're going to offload that to the cloud, but you may not necessarily move the entire application to the cloud. What you typically will do is you may use a service bus to kind of mediate between on-premise and cloud components of your application. Yeah. This is the service bus. And then finally is the access control component of Windows Azure App Fabric. Access control, kind of name says, speaks for itself. It manages the security aspects of connecting to your cloud services, to your applications or services that you host on the Windows Azure platform. So here, just a quick slide, just to see, like you have your consumers, you have enterprises connecting via the internet to Windows Azure. Windows Azure actually being a bulk load of servers, instances that you can define up front. I want to have one instance, two instances, 100 instances, as many as you need for your resourcing, for your processing. And then it's up to Windows Azure and the components, the internal components of the platform, to spin up instances for you, to patch those instances, because it's Patch Tuesday, and once a month we need to patch all of the servers. The Windows Azure platform will take care that all of your instances get properly patched, get upgraded, that health monitoring happens here. So this is all the role of the underlying platform. So this is one of the big advantages of platform as a service as opposed to infrastructure as a service, where for platform as a service, it's the platform that takes care of the actual servers and the patching, whereas infrastructure as a service, a typical hosting a VM on Amazon, you own your virtual machine, you have to do the patching and the upgrading and all that comes with it. Developing for Windows Azure. As already mentioned this morning, when we had development for Windows and different devices, different types of applications, there's one familiar, one common environment that you use for doing those developments, which is Visual Studio. Cloud developments, again, Windows Azure developments, everything happens in that same Visual Studio that you're familiar with. It's the same managedcode.net that you can use for building your applications. You have a local environment where you can actually emulate Windows Azure on your own PC. So the developer can basically have some emulation environment where he can actually emulate the whole cloud, okay? And do debugging and pretend as if he would deploy to the cloud. So management APIs, of course, the same as you know, system.diagnostics classes that exists in normal, typical .NET development are also available to you and integrate perfectly with cloud development. Second important point there, you may think Windows Azure, Windows, Microsoft, it's going to be all the way .NET, going to be pure Microsoft. I have a Java application, I have some PHP developments. Can I use Windows Azure for that? You may think that you can't do that, but Martin will prove you prove you wrong. Basically, Windows Azure and the vision of Microsoft, and especially the vision of Microsoft with Windows, Windows on-premise allows you to run any application, be it a Java application, be it something else, be it Microsoft, be it non-Microsoft. You can run it on Windows. And we have that same vision for Windows Azure. We don't want to be exclusive and say you can only run .NET and manage code on Windows Azure. We actually open up the platform to run different technologies, to run Java applications there, to run PHP, etc. So Martin will go into a lot of detail on that. And then again, proven Microsoft technologies, Visual Studio, ASP.NET, SQL Azure as opposed to SQL Server. There's no new syntaxes, no new concepts that you need to that you really need to know for moving into the cloud, for moving into Windows Azure. So the developers that are developing ASP.NET applications right now are perfectly capable of running and deploying applications on Windows Azure. So it's all within that same development experience that you already know of. We want to make the cloud as fluffy, as invisible as possible. Make the sun go the sun shine through it. So I have a demo on how you build your first application on Azure. Maybe show of hands, how many have already done some Azure developments? Yeah. That's okay. Bit less than half. Okay. So what we'll start off with, I'll just open up Visual Studio. Okay. And we'll just do a new project. Is this visible for most of you? If you can't read it, just let me know. Just shout. So what you have here in your install templates is cloud. We're doing a cloud project. I think it's a Windows Azure project. Let's call it just Windows Azure Project 3. Just OK it. So what will come up is you can actually choose and pick different types of application of actual roles that you want to have available within your application within Windows Azure. So there is what we call a web role, which is typically an application that that uses IIS typically, so a web server to access it. So it could be web service, could be ASP.NET, could be ASP.NET MVC, so everything that has an HTTP endpoint. Yeah. Then there's worker roles, which are more, like it says, background processing services. So typically, if you have batch processing, those heavy calculations, for example, video encoding, all of that you typically do in a worker role. It's some background processing. This is also where you could run other, for example, your own web server. Yeah. And that's about it. The other ones are basically just variations of the other two. So we'll just pick an ASP.NET web role. So what we're doing here is just host an ASP.NET application on Windows Azure. So what you see here, in Solution Explorer is just your web role, which is basically your ASP.NET application, which you also have if you do just normal ASP.NET on-premise applications, with your default ASPX, your web.config, all of that, very familiar. The default.aspx is pretty much the same as you have in normal development. And then there's the actual Windows Azure project, which is just an add-on which tells when you deploy, I have a web role and I have a configuration of my service and service definition where you store, for example, parameters such as how many machines do I want to have allocated when I deploy this application. So I may choose, if I have an ASP.NET web application, I want to deploy it into Windows Azure. I need 2 instances, 3 instances, or just 1, because I'm just testing. You can just define it through configuration, one of those configuration files. So what we will do here is a typical hello. Just put in code behind. Hello, Azure, something like this. Not to take hello world. So all we need to do now is just F5, just run it. And we have an application that runs that is cloud enabled. It's actually executing, running the deployment. So it's starting up. It's going to run the application, the ASP.NET application, on the local, basically the local simulation environment of Windows Azure. So you can actually go through debugging your cloud application, and that's it. Yeah. So it just looks like a normal normal ASP.NET application. What you will see here. What you can see here is, I'm just going to make it a bit bigger, is that you have here, for example, your compute emulator user interface that shows you your instances that are running. You also have a storage emulator showing you that your storage services are up and running on your local machine. So this gives you the view on your own simulated Azure environment. So here, for example, we could see that we have, for our Windows Azure project, one web role. There's only one instance. Yeah. So if we would want multiple instances for this application, we could just go in here and say we want two instances. Here you can actually see it. The instance count, we can just move it up to 2, 5, whatever. If we then run the application, it comes up, looks like before. But now you can actually see that we have two instances running. If we were to deploy this into Windows Azure, so not on the local machine, it would actually spin up two virtual machines for you. Having two virtual machines sitting next to each other, processing requests that come in for your application. Yeah.
Question.
Yes, Leo?
Is the incoming traffic then load balanced across
Yes.
two?
Yes. Instances? Yeah, yeah. So the Windows Azure platform takes care of routing and load balancing requests to your instances, yes. Yeah.
Does it use a sticky session?
Nope. Yeah. Yeah, indeed. So it's sticky-less. So every request can end up on a different instance and typically ends up on a different instance. Yes. So state management, indeed. If you have, for example, session state configured in ASP.NET, you have to make sure that session state is either persisted in some way or form that is central to your instances. So be it SQL Azure or be it the AppFabric caching service. So there's a caching service also available in the AppFabric that would allow you to have an in-memory cache, but which goes cross instances. So there's ways to kind of configure session state to point to the AppFabric cache. Yeah. Does that answer your question?
It does. Another question.
Yes, go ahead.
The load on the instances, why isn't that made or changed automatically? So if load is going up, here you have to define the number of instances you use, but why not let the system decide that I need another instance to run?
The system does not scale automatically, so it does not. It does.
There are several reasons for that. One reason is you would be surprised if it scales up. Based on your invoice, it would also scale up. So you will not have. You're only capping until the many instances that you want, and you will not scale up.
Yes, but this means that the unpredictable still can happen, and you don't know that it happens.
So what you have to do is you have to create some kind of framework that monitors your performance metrics, and then makes a decision based on the performance metrics whether the CPU utilization is above 90%, in general, on average, for all the instances, then we would scale out. There is a management API that developers can use for scaling out multiple instances.
Yeah.
So basically changing the configuration, and then the fabric controller will add up a new instance and put it behind the load balancer.
Yeah.
So the most important reason that we don't scale out automatically is because you don't want to have a very high invoice. You want to keep your costs under control. But on the other hand, it's very difficult to create a generic approach that fits all type of applications for scaling.
Yeah.
Every type of application, every architecture has its own reasons to scale. Some scale based on CPU utilization, some based
on memory.
Must be scaled on disk space and so on. So it's up to you. You have control over your costs, but it's also up to you to make the decision based on some metrics to scale out.
What happens if you don't scale out? Does the system crash?
No, then at the end you will have the same experience as in a normal environment. You will have less performance, and the performance goes down.
Okay. And if you hit,
monitoring on it so that you get alerted, so that you can then manually add instances.
Yeah. Yes.
We have System Center Operation Manager. There is an additional management pack for SCOM, System Center Operation Manager, that can look at your instances in the cloud, in your Azure instances, and monitor the performance, and you define the performance metrics that you want yourself, and you tell it how many times you want to have that metric downloaded, and then some decision logic, and then you have some PowerShell commands to add all these systems. So there is a management environment based on the System Center Operation Manager. You can do it either as a developer, you can create your own scaling engine, or you can use System Center Operation Manager to do the scaling.
Yeah. Correct. Thank you. So this is just a quick intro on how you can build an application on Azure. So it's actually pretty simple. Nothing actually changes for a normal ASP.NET application. You can just go about and deploy it as you would otherwise. Having gone through this first demo and quick overview of Windows Azure, I want to go and dive into a number of scenarios, a number of deployment options that you have available to you for moving into the cloud and specifically on Windows Azure. So typically, the kind of beginner scenario or the easy scenario would be I want to use the cloud and I want to use Windows Azure as an extension for storing data. So I have large data demands. I don't know how much data I'm going to have to manage. I'm going to have to deal with. So I'm using the cloud as an extension of my data store. Yeah. So I'm using the cloud for storing data. Second one is extending existing applications with new services that you host into the cloud. So you're actually making modules, components of your application, and you run those in the cloud. Typically because they have some behavior that fall into one of the four categories where you may have increasing or have bursts of resources that you need, or because you can't anticipate how much load you're going to need and thus can't provision the hardware for it. So creating, extending, using compute and storage as an extension to your current application. Third, scenario is to actually move an entire application into the cloud, providing your application as a service. And then the final one is you can actually create new applications by combining different cloud services, making some kind of not portal but integrated solution that combines services, be it on-premise, be it in the cloud, and make integrated and composed connected applications. Using first going into the first scenario, saving your data in the cloud, either you have relational data that you want to store, so an extension to SQL Server, but go to the cloud and store that relational data in a SQL Azure database. So that's one option, which is pretty easy to do. It's a matter of setting up your database in SQL Azure, storing data in it, connecting to it, interacting with that database. Happens in exactly the same way as you would do as connecting to an on-premise SQL Server database. Second option is if you have non-relational data, be it documents, Word documents, PDF documents, be it media content, such as images, music, any other data or form, could be binaries. Could be any type of data, so it could be binaries or media files. You can store them in Azure, Azure Storage, which could be either blobs, tables. So there, you actually use a cloud as an extension for your data. A number of questions that you need to ask is, can you actually store the data more cheaply in the cloud? That's something you need to be some assessment that you need to make. How much data do you have? What is your current deal with your hardware provider? How much does a SAN cost, etc.? Also, do you need the data to be shared? Do you need to be accessible on different locations? Do you need to kind of keep multiple copies? Do you need to synchronize between different copies of your data when you have them on premise? Maybe making it more efficient to store it in the cloud, have that single data access store.
How do you deal with data protection, such as backup and store, and performance, like indexing, recreation, indexes, these kind of things? Is it all taken care of for you by Microsoft, or do you still have to intervene through some API or something?
It's a different story. SQL Azure, like indexing, is part of your maintenance as your task as a database administrator. Correct me if I'm wrong, Kurt. as opposed to, for example, Azure Storage. So first mentioning SQL Azure, currently you don't, it's the system actually backs it up for you. There's multiple copies of your database that exist at all times. So just three copies at any time of your database that are available, that are highly available. If you want to have that data on-premise, there's technology that exists like SQL Server integration services, for example, for syncing that to an on-premise database. Or you could use the data sync, the sync framework, basically, for syncing to on-premise. With regards to Azure Storage, there is no real backup scenario or functionality foreseen.
You can create your own snapshot. So if you're talking about blobs, you can create a daily snapshot of the blob and also store it in
storage.
Also for SQL Azure, there is a snapshot that you can take. So for every database, you say, well, at the end of the day, every night, I take a snapshot, so I have a backup that I can report if I'm restored. So every night, I have a snapshot. But there's no physical backup like a tape system. You don't have access to that physical backup. But there is a high availability system. Every database is running on three physical machines. So we have a copy on three physical machines. So if a machine goes down, there is always another one that is taking over.
Yeah.
What about performance? Because usually we have maintenance scripts for re-indexing and these kind of things.
That will be exactly the same. You can run your maintenance scripts on SQL Azure.
You have to take care of
so the performance within your database. If you're talking about re-indexing your tables, you do it like you do it before.
Yeah, with the impact that you have as an on-premise database, of course. Yeah, so that does not change. Okay. Some scenarios kind of boils down to the the examples already given in the four buckets. You could have, for example, an accounting application where actual documents, typically you need to provide proof of expenses, where you scan those documents and you want to store them. So these are actually media documents or media files that you store in Azure Storage, for example. They tend to grow quite large over periods of time, as the data needs to be stored over long periods. Training company, for example, wants to store training videos, high volume media files that you want to store, or, for example, any ISV can store relational data in a SQL Azure database just for high availability reasons. If you need high availability, it is not that easy and not that cheap to have a SQL Server cluster set up with shared storage and all of that to have a highly available SQL Server environment. It needs some skill and some investment to get that up and running. With SQL Azure, that high availability comes with the platform. Some things, they mention them here as issues, it's rather concerns or considerations, is in terms of performance and relational data. SQL Azure, there's databases, there's limits to what the size of one instance can be. You have to make sure in your application that you can deal with that, that you do charting, where we provide guidance on how to do that, where you split data over multiple databases, which is also optimal for large-scale deployments. So you can easily scale out at the data site. And then a number of trust issues. Typically in government environments, it may not always, there may be some concerns on where the data is stored. Some scenarios, typically, you can't deploy to the cloud because data needs to be stored within the given country. Some for legal reasons. Just have a quick demo on how you can actually build an application that saves data in the cloud. Typical sample that comes from the training kit. Okay, where we have, I'm just going to show you the application. So it's a guestbook application. People can leave a message, put their name there, put an image up there, and just post that to a guestbook. So what happens is, so here, for example, you can enter a name, be it ISV Discovery Day, happy Azure, whatever. Add some photograph. There we go. Upload the image, and it shows up here in the list. So what actually happens behind the scenes is that the image is being stored in blob storage, in Azure storage, and the actual message is being stored also in Azure storage, being it in table storage. So you have different types. So here, I'm just going to magnify this a bit. So we can see here is that first we're uploading the image to blob storage, which is just creating a cloud blob, and then set a bunch of properties, upload it, and get the data into your actual cloud, in the Azure cloud. The syntax takes some learning, of course, with every API. It needs some ramp up. But it's pretty easy, pretty compact in terms of how much code it requires for uploading something into the cloud. Happens is then we'll create a new entry in table storage, putting the message there. And then what happens is finally, what happens also is that we send a message on a queue. A queue, again, is something which you can compare to, for example, MSMQ in the on-premise world. is to allow you to send messages between different Azure roles. So typically what you use this for is queuing. Here the application, what it will do is you receive the image, maybe very bulky, and you may want to process that. Either if it's a video file encoded to make it more compact, to convert it in a different format for an image, you may do some processing, scale it down, make a thumbnail of it. This is what the sample application does. It will actually make a thumbnail image of that large image and show that in the list instead of the original file. So typically what you do is, when receiving the input message on your web role, you just post a message in a queue saying, hey, my image is stored in blob storage, convert it. And then you'd have a worker role, some kind of batch processing that goes on, reads the queue, there's a new message, I need to process image XYZ, and goes on and updates storage, creates a new thumbnail, does other processing. So this is typically how you make large-scale applications. You kind of offload all the processing, the heavy lifting, all of that you offload to a worker role through queuing. You actually notify different roles that there is work to do. Okay, just a quick demo. No, but what you can have worker role-like functionality, like batch processing functionality, being run on a web role, for example. So you could combine the functionality of having this web role which receives a request and a worker role that actually processes the request. You could have that on one instance, for example. That is an option. Typically, different roles are deployed to different servers. So if you have a worker role and a web role, and you say instance count 2, that would double the two of them. Or, well, you could double or triple depending on the role. Second scenario is I have an application. It needs, for some functionalities, it needs extra processing power. Because we need to do the video encoding, we need to do image conversion, we need to do heavy calculations that we just add to our application. So we're actually extending our application. What we do is we can just build a new service, for example, web server, typically a web service that you make available to your application that will then perform all of the functionality that you need to do. This is a very typical scenario. You have an existing application. You gradually want to take advantage of the cloud. You just add new modules, new components of your application, or you just rewrite components of your application to be running on the cloud because they are more targeted towards cloud scenarios, one of the four buckets. So again, we've gone through most of these. So video streaming, do encoding. There are some sample on the Steve Marks. Steve Marks has posted a sample on how to actually run expression encoder on a Windows Azure environment, where you actually give it a video, and through expression encoder, the video will be encoded to a different format. You'll add some message on top of it. So that has been done. And it explains in detail on how you can do this. Last sample here also, BMW uses Windows Azure. It's more in a high-performance computing way to actually leverage the high-intense calculations that are needed in the design process. Designing new cars takes a lot of calculations and processing power. So they use cloud computing for that scenario. So typically, scientific research is heavy calculation intensive. So again, a number of considerations. Actually, can you a validation that you need to make? Can your application run on Windows Azure? Is it something that can be accessible? Can be deployed there? There is very limited applications that can't actually run on Windows Azure. But you need to take into account the nature of an instance that can go down at any time because it fails, that it spins up. It's a stateless model, so your virtual machines should, in fact, behave in a stateless way. Existing code, can it be ported onto Windows Azure? Yes or no? Again, business issues, business concerns is rather towards trust and whether it's legal to run part of your application in the cloud.
Can you somehow know where your data is being stored? You said that you can't store them in a specific country, but can you, for instance, make sure it's stored in the European Union?
Yes. When you provision a service on Windows Azure, you actually specify the region where the application is hosted. So that could be Northern America or, the United States. There's different regions. Could be Asia, could be Europe.
We have two regions within Europe. We have two regions, Northern Europe and Western Europe. And Northern Europe is actually in Dublin, in Ireland. And if you select Western Europe, it's in Amsterdam. So there are two data centers in Europe. And you have to decide whether it is in Amsterdam or Dublin. We don't specify Dublin or Amsterdam, we specify Northern Europe or Western Europe. Those are the two regions. And in the US, there are four regions. Yep. And in Asia, there are also two regions.
Maybe a related question. Is there any kind of GeoIP service included in the platform so that you can query where your client's coming from? Maybe where you translate the IP address into country ID? It's a very useful service that normally you have to build yourself or buy somewhere.
This is not a service which is part of the platform.
That relates to where a client comes from.
For instance, if you build a site, let's say where you can purchase a product, then it's typically that, depending on where the customer is coming from, you have to hold off VAT or not.
Mm-hmm.
It's already... Then it's nice to know if IP address is, for instance, in the United States or in Europe, so that you can already set the profile.
You can know the IP address. You will know the IP address of your customer or the browser that is using the application, but you have to do the lookup yourself. So you have to build your own database or rely on a third party
to do IP,
that translate IP to
the geolocation. Yeah. So that's not in there. Maybe on a related topic is what we call the CDN, the Content Delivery Network, which is actually a service that sits on top of Azure, and that is more in scenarios where you have an application or where you have data in your application that you want to expose globally, and you want to have the data as close as possible to the consumers because they may be bandwidth intensive. So streaming videos, for example, if you're in Asia and the data is in the US, it may not be optimal to stream that data. So what we foresee for that is the content delivery network, which actually brings your data closer to where the consumers are. So that's a component. Excuse me?
That's like the same idea.
Yeah. 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 Some kind of proxy. Yeah. Then finally, moving entire applications, which is basically a combination of moving data and compute new services into Windows Azure, where you need to take into account, of course, and this is not something that the platform itself takes care of the multi-tenancy. This is something that you need to kind of build in your application yourself, that your application is capable of handling requests from multiple customers at the same time on that same infrastructure. Yeah. Typical scenarios, Mahmoud, for example, Norwegian company, has built an accounting software that they deploy globally. So it's a full packaged application accounting application that is available worldwide, which is basically just an application that they provide as a service. So it's running in your browser. You can do everything with it. Other examples are, they don't necessarily are on Windows Azure, but you have the same like CRM Online. SharePoint Online is a software as a service. So they have built an application that is a complete application that they provide to you as a service. So this may be something, if, for example, you have already a web application, you may opt to provide it as a service on Windows Azure, for example. Again, a number of questions, specifically on the business. And this is where I think the presentation from Kurt will go into detail, is related to pricing. Azure and cloud computing deals all with pay as you use. So you're using an hour of compute, an hour of CPU. You're using X gigabytes of or terabytes of data. So you pay X amount at the end of the month. So it's a cost that depends on the amount of resource that you use. Somehow, either as an ISV, you decide that you want to, as a pricing model, have the Azure subscription sit with your customer, your end customer. So he takes the subscription, and you build your application to run on Windows Azure. So that's one option. So all of the pricing is dealt with by the customer. Second option is that you yourself, as an ISV, manage the subscription for Windows Azure. If you do that, of course, either you give a one-to-one mapping, you say pricing for Windows Azure this month, you consumed X number of data, you've used so many hours of compute. In a multi-tenant mode, you need to kind of find out how much hours a specific user or customer has spent. Either you need to kind of change your business model, or and this is equal in a software as a service model, not necessarily to Azure, is that how do you map, for example, an hour of CPU to your end user? Do you use a business model which on a per user basis? So you have X number of users subscribe to your application, so that is X amount of euros per month, per year. You have a fixed fee. So all these questions are things you need to take in mind when moving into the cloud using this pay-as-you-go model. Make that translation into your own business model. Something to think about. So as a summary, question you can ask, how can Windows Azure improve your applications, either just use it as storage, cheap storage. You have loads of data. Just move it into the cloud. Have it highly available to all of your users. Maybe you need processing power because you have some heavy lifting processing to do. Can you move it to cloud compute? Do you want to build and have your service, your application, available as a service to for global reach? Take into mind pricing changes, multi-tenancy, etc. So these are kind of different scenarios, some of which can be combined, data compute, into different scenarios, different connected applications that you can provide to your customers. With that, I just want to reiterate, I think Hermine will come back to that later again. There's another slide on your business, your fame, and next steps. If Windows Azure is something that interests you, you could look at the Windows Azure portal, plan some pilot applications, participate in the Your Business, Your Fame campaign, and maybe win nice prizes, get some fame, get well known, and reap the benefits of the cloud computing platform. Any further questions? Feel free.
What kind of authentication mechanisms can you use? if you move an application to the cloud, is that completely free, or is it something that you have to use, like Windows Live? Is it, do you do it yourself, or is it something you can use for Microsoft?
It's basically a combination. And as a former consultant, it depends. Authentication. There's different ways you can do authentication. Typically, what cloud computing and security model that we use there is claim based authentication. And then is the question: where does your what is the provider, the identity provider, to give you the claim that you are Leo Olivers, or that you are Nick Troff from Microsoft? And there, the platform provides you a number of, there's first Active Directory Federation services, which basically allows you to have authentication based on the data that is in your Active Directory. This is typically for a business application that you're running, and you want your users within your organization to be able to connect to authenticate to your application without having to create a second identity store. With that, you can use Active Directory Federation services, which will provide claims based on information that's in Active Directory. Second option, providers that are available that integrate with the access control service is authentication based on Live ID. So there, again, it will check into if there's a Live ID user. Well, he could use that authentication mechanism. Of course, your application is responsible for knowing what user a specific Live ID user is. Same thing goes for Facebook. So you could use a Facebook account for authenticating to a Windows Azure application through the access control service. Again, same thing applies as with Windows Live ID. What Facebook account corresponds to, for example, me? I could use any Facebook account and say that it's Nick Troff from Microsoft. So there's patterns where you, for example, first have users provide additional information. You give them some kind of key, some kind of GUID, which they can then use to actually link that information to a specific Facebook ID. Yeah. That's one option. So Facebook, Live ID, Active Directory, Federation Services. Third one is Yahoo, maybe not that widespread, Yahoo IDs, also Google.
Authentication?
There's OAuth,
upcoming,
yes, not there yet. And of course, there is always a possibility to write your own secure token provider, where you actually can get information sent into that provider, look up in some custom database, for example, for finding that specific user, and then providing a claim to access control service. So you can create your own identity providers if you have some custom identity store.
Could you use a mix of providers? Let's say somebody chooses to use Facebook account, or somebody else chooses Windows Live. That's all possible within the same application.
Yes.
It's on the new application that's what we use access control services for. Access control services is the aggregator of multiple identity providers towards one claim model that your application knows.
So for the application, you're using a specific claim saying username is this specific format that you want to use within your application. It's the role of the access control service to map claims that come from different providers, Facebook, Live ID, ADFS, to map that in that one common claim that your application understands. So you actually decouple your application from the individual identity providers, which is kind of the nirvana of identity control. And that also integrates, for example, there's ways to integrate that with membership provider and all of that, so you can, in your application, if you have an existing ASP.NET application, still use those familiar functionalities that you have, that you're used to. You can still use with Azure.
And if you take it one step step further. So I guess this application is happening on the web rules where the user interfaces with.
Not necessarily.
But the next steps in the chain, like the app fabric service and so is that then, do you authenticate the original user that's on the sitting behind the browser? Or is that more like a trust structure?
Well, your application receives a claim. Whatever information you want to receive in that claim is up to the application to decide. Say if your application wants to receive a username, an email address, telephone number, and an organization ID. Those four informations need to be in there. That claim, that information is available to your application.
And that flows?
And you could pass that information indeed through.
Okay.